Blackfish Fridays on
I mix what I like.
Many week shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm sorry I kept you.
I mix what I like.
Thank you very much. Let's continue on. We want you to continue to join in. Right now, we're going back around again, bringing to you those very fine men of song.
We want you to know you're free to clap your hands, pat your feet, and let's have a little church. What'd you say?
Amen.
I hear you say yeah.
That's right. Welcome back to another edition of I Mix What I Like right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. I got a little bit lost in that track. It's called The Axe. And yeah, man, Cornel West Theory. Man, first of all, I got a number of things we need to get to off the top here. First of all, it's good to be back. WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Jared Ball. Dr. Haight is handling the people's business. Dr. Burrows is handling the people's business. Red Eagle is on the boards making sure things sound as they're supposed to. At I Mix What I Like for all of your relevant social media. IMixWhatILike.org for more. Shout out to Baby Girl in the intro. We have a big show coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to be joined by filmmaker Stanley Nelson to talk about a local showing of his new film about the Black Panther Party. And then we have some music we want to get to and a couple of announcements and things to discuss. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to open up the phones and hear from you. We're not around for community comment today. We haven't really been fully constituted here at the program in a couple of weeks, so, and we haven't done that in a while, so we're going to open up the phones, maybe talk a little bit about Jimi Hendrix, a couple other things to get into. But very quickly, the beat you're listening to is from the Cornel West Theory, and I want to give them a special shout out and a shout out to Tim Hicks, because the reason I have it now and the reason I'm airing it right now is because a couple of days ago we put out a call. And I want to share this all with you, and maybe we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it after we wrap with Mr. Nelson for a few minutes. But we've been talking about the George Jackson video mixtape that I and Bashi Rose have been putting together and have put together for the Real News Network in Baltimore. You can check out an interview we just did with the Global African and Bill Fletcher about the mixtape at imixwhatilike.org. It'll be up at the Real News website soon enough as well. But the mixtape is being held up primarily because we had initially wanted to use J Dilla Beats as a tribute to him, to George, and make it a video mixtape. We had artists create songs with those Dilla Beats. And we had worked out a little bit of a thing where we thought we would be able to do that and everything would be okay. But things have not really gone in that direction. And some copyright holders. And this is why I want to take some time later on and maybe talk about this with all of you, because we need to talk about the control over art and cultural expression, who has it and why they have it and what they're trying to do with it. And So what? So in the short response here, or the short version here, is that we were denied access. We're denied use of those Dilla beats. So what we did a couple of days ago, we put out a call, which we probably should have done off the top, but we put out a call and got a request out asking for people to send us some beats and work with us. And the response in just one day was off the hook. And the response was very short. It was very quick, rather. In just a short, quick, in one day, we got responses from Tim Hicks and the Cornell West Theory. They're going to supply us with some beats. My man DJ RBI, big shout out to DJ RBI. Big shout out to DJ RBI. Put us in touch with a number of DC area's finest, including Heck Dolo and others that we're going to get to in a little bit, who have all agreed to offer us some beats. My man Red Eagle, the multi-talented genius here at WPFW, he's supplying us with beats. And then we also got jazz drummer, internationally renowned jazz drummer, internationally known, respected, my favorite, maybe my favorite going right now, Billy Kilson. Reached out to him, and based on our prior, you know, work, you know, interviewing and discussion around the film Whiplash, he is kicking in. So we're going to get original music from him, some soloing, jazz drumming to go with this George Jackson mix. So that's what's holding up the mixtape. It is coming, and very excited about it. So a shout out to all those people. Thank you all very much. In just one day, we got all of those responses. So a lot more is coming. So when the mixtape comes out, it's going to be fully official and cleared and acceptable to the world, at least in terms of licensing and legality. Maybe not so acceptable politically, and that's something maybe we can get into a little bit here with our first guest this morning, filmmaker, my colleague, even now at Morgan State University, award-winning filmmaker Stanley Nelson, joins us now from New York City. I believe he's going to be in town here shortly to show his latest film, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of a Revolution. He has made so many, going back to Freedom Bags, The Black Press Soldiers Without Swords, Wounded Knee, Freedom Riders, Freedom Summer, so many films he has made, and he now works with Firelight Media and joins us now. Mr. Stanley Nelson, welcome to the show, to I Mix What I Like in WPFW. Good morning. Stanley Nelson, you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning. Thank you for joining the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm actually in D.C. already.
Oh, well, that's what's up. Even better. So he's in D.C. And by the way, he is only the second of that Nelson family to join this show. Jill Nelson, his sister. Again, very well-known journalist and author, has been a guest of this program as well. So we're looking, you know, we're happy to have more of the Nelson clan on board. Welcome again to the show. Tell us a little bit about this film. I had the pleasure of moderating a panel with you at Morgan State University, and Kichi Taifa, shout out to her as well, was on that panel, and had a very good community discussion and semi-viewing of the film. But tell us a little bit about the Black Panthers, the Vanguard of the Revolution, and where and when people can see it as part of this event for which you are in D.C.?
Well, the film opens today at the East Street Cinema, and it's there for a week, all day, every day, just like, you know, Mission Impossible or The Avengers or something. It opens today, and I will be there at the 4:30 screening this afternoon to do Q&A, and then at the 7:15 screening tonight. But, you know, it's there all day, every day. And then the other producer of the film comes in town after me, and she'll be there to do Q&A. We've got former Panthers, et cetera, to do the Q&A. So it should be a real event. The film is the first real look into the Black Panther Party, the first feature-length film to really talk about the rise and fall of the Black Panther Party. We have not only maybe 30 Panthers in there, everybody from Kathleen Cleaver, Lane Brown, Emery Douglas, who was the artist for the Panthers, Big Man Howard, who was one of the first Panthers, Erica Huggins. We have, you know, maybe 30 or so people who are lesser known, who were what was called the rank and file. And we really wanted the film to also give that story, you know, what it meant day to day to be part of the Black Panthers. You know, why someone joined in Washington or Chicago or Baltimore or New York or L.A. and what they did and what it was like being part of the Panthers, why they joined and then also why they left. The film opened 2 weeks ago in New York, and it's just been, it's been nuts. It's been nuts. We sold out every single night in New York. We've been extended in New York, in the two theaters we're in New York, and in Boston we were also extended. And those are the only theaters we've been in. So this weekend we open in New York. I'm sorry, we open in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, Providence, Santa Fe, and others, and then we spread out all over the country with the film.
So as you sort of collect the response and the positive response, mostly that's coming to the film, I know you said that this is the first feature-length film to really deal with the Black Panther Party, but it's certainly not the first documentary, or certainly obviously not the first book or newspaper article or television series or something, or film even, to address some form of something related to the Black Panther Party in that era. What is it that you find or are finding that people are saying is particular to your film that piques their interest so much, or has them filling the seats at these theaters when they've had the opportunity to do so?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that happened as we were starting the film, I would tell people, you know, well, I'm working on this film on the Black Panther Party, the rise and fall of the Black Panther Party, and people would say, oh, hasn't that been done before? And I would say to them, okay, so which film is that you're talking about? Because I don't think anything has been done that really tries to talk about the whole story. We also, in the film, interview FBI agents, police, informers. All of those things are wrapped into the film. I think the film is the first thing that really gives a clear idea of what the FBI did and J. Edgar Hoover did to undermine the Black Panthers. And we're able to do that because through the Freedom of Information Act, we're able to get documents, you know, in J. Edgar Hoover's own words, where he says, you know, we have to destroy the Panthers. We have to pit Huey Newton against Eldridge Cleaver. We have to pit spouse against spouse. All those things that were kind of like a what I call an urban rumor, you know, are there in black and white on paper in the orders of J. Edgar Hoover.
You know, one of the things, I mean, the first documentary I think of that approaches and does a good amount of what you've said, but albeit some time ago and albeit from a bit of a different perspective, was Lee Lu Lee's All Power to the People. I don't know if I think this is like 1996. Mm-hmm. And where they did some of the same kind of thing in trying to address the internal struggle, the relationship to the state, interviewing, you know, agents and so on. One of the big differences between that and yours was just, I think, maybe the technology or no disrespect to him, the skill or the aesthetic of the film. Yours is I think decidedly different and impressive, and also the way you include some of the rank and file. I think as you mentioned, and my favorite part was Wayne Farr, who I was sad to hear passed away not too long ago, talking about the shootout with the L.A. Police officers, and that line that I keep going back to when I think of your film. That he said he felt free, that he felt truly free during that shootout, which I thought was a pretty powerful moment. But it is interesting that Lee Lu Lee's film comes out, and one of the things that it argued was that, and I want to use this as a quick sort of segue, was that it takes the argument aggressively that Elaine Brown was an agent, and then here she has come more recently to critique your film for what it does and doesn't do, including, as she argues, leaves out some of the better aspects of Huey Newton and sort of focuses on some of what was part of some argue his downfall at the end of his life. But I'm wondering if how you respond to maybe not hers in particular. Hers was a pretty hostile critique, but critiques in general. I mean, I did share with you at the time of that panel that I felt that one of the things I would have liked to see more is while you do talk about Huey's downfall, one of the things I've never seen in film, including the Lilu Lees or anything else that I've seen, is a real discussion of his ideas or what he was trying to do or what made him a threat to the state or what made him such an inspiration still to this day to black people. But I'm wondering how have you responded to those kinds of critiques about your discussion of Huey or maybe even the absence of George Jackson or some of those other kinds of critiques that have come out?
Well, I think first I should say that the, you know, the reviews and the reception by audiences and the reception by Panthers has been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, overwhelmingly positive. We might have shown the film to 200 Panthers. We've got 3 who have a problem with the film. And I take those odds. You know, if you had told me going in that there might be 3 people who take exception to the film, I would say great. You know, we knew when we made the film that we couldn't please everybody. You know, Jared, you know the Panthers. Could you imagine any film that the Panthers would all agree on was perfect? So, no. So, you know, I think that we stand by the film. And again, we've done screenings, you know, multiple screenings all over the country where we've had Panthers as guests and Panthers speak. So I really defend the film. You know, the film is a 2-hour film. We can't include every single story that was part of the Panther movement. It's a 2-hour film. I think what we try to do in the film is give you a clear line and give you a clear understanding of the Panther movement. I think we're very, very, very fair to Huey. I think that we talk about Huey's genius and Huey, was the visionary of the party, people say in the film. I have to say too that the film has no narration. So the words that you hear, in especially the words, nobody says anything negative about Huey except former Panthers. So they're the ones who have something to say about Huey. And Huey's problems were clearly documented. I mean, if we had made the film and not talked about some of Huey's problems, we would be set on a pillar and put on top of a fire. Because Huey's problems are well documented over and over and over again. And I think the bottom line for me about the Panthers is what they did and who they are stands up to real and honest scrutiny. And I think that's what is in the film. The film, at the film, we get standing ovations for the film. And then when the Panthers come out to speak, people are going wild. And as one Panther said to me in New York, you know, I never thought in my life that I'd get a standing ovation from an audience in the Village that just paid to see a film on the Panthers. So again, I stand by the film. I think the film is fair to Huey. I think the film does a fairly good job of talking about what the Panthers believed. We go into a long section about the 10-point program. The film ends with the 10-point program. I think that's very clear what the Panthers believed. I think that too, you know, the Panthers are a strange thing because everybody knows something about the Panthers. Everybody has their kind of little Panther story or Panther story that they know and that they are looking for in the film. So once again, you know, kind of we get a lot of times, well, what about Angela Davis? What about Angela Davis? And Angela Davis was not a Black Panther.
Right. I mean,
she was not a Black Panther. And
that,
I
right.
saw Angela Davis at an event about 6 weeks ago and I said, Angela, I just want, you know, in the film, you know, we don't really talk about your case, and I just want to hear from your words, were you a Black Panther? And she said, no, I was not a Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my beliefs aligned with the Panthers, but I was not a Black Panther.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, tell us again, Stanley Nelson, one more time, where the film is showing today and what time and how people can keep up with your work going forward.
Well, I think the most important thing to know, Jared, is that the film is playing all week. This is not a film festival. This is a theatrical run. So it's at the E Street Cinema in downtown D.C. All week. It starts today, and I will be there at the 4:30 screening and then at the 7:15 screening. And then all weekend, the other producer of the film, Lorenz Grant, comes in town, and we have guests. We have former Panthers. We have others who will be speaking. And it's playing all week at E Street. I think the best way to find out, you know, what exactly is going on with the film is the website is theblackpanthers.com. Theblackpanthers.com. And that's the best way to find out, you know, who the speakers are, what the screening times are. If you got people in other cities, you know, we are going all over the country. We're going to Chicago and LA and the Bay Area and Detroit and all those cities. If you go to theblackpanthers.com, you can find that out. Also, if anybody wants to read more about the film, there's a review of the film in the Washington Post today.
All right, Stanley Nelson, thanks again for joining us here at I Mix What I Like and on WPFW 89.3 FM, and good luck with the rest of the film's run, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, everybody, that's the good Stanley Nelson, filmmaker. Check out everything, theblackpanthers.com, for more information on that film and more. Going to take a quick break and come back in just a minute something I started teased out at the top. I want to come back to in just a minute, and then we're going to take another break after that, and then we'll open up the phones and dialogue with you here at I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. Back in just a minute, everybody. Peace.
It's Blackfish Fridays.
Yo, cleanse me, clean me of my sour soul of vicious. My mind races from the satellite dishes. No technology, this world's corrupt. They can't feed me food for thought. I won't budge, I'm a twisted individual. They say critical, I say again, I'm on top of my pinnacle. Chessboards and swords, alphabetical darts. My clan is Braveheart, I move like Paul Blart. Sloppy, go ahead and try to stop me if you can. Your casualties are get left in the sand. I'm Iron Man, a stone-faced killer with a mask. Don't want the truth to don't ask, you couldn't handle a task. Rigorous, my war face is one that God gave me. Evil cause I looked all bugged out and crazy. Dusted, embalming and fluid dripping from my nose hole. Staple to nigga, never catch me wearing rose gold.
I mix what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like. Come on, man. Yo, yo, go f*** the CIA, DEA, the feds. They got you bugged, son. Michael tripping your meds, wax like dreads. Smoking rags on the list like Craig. Steroids in the chickens, why they feeding us eggs? Hot in the dish, looking, chin chicken. I won't switch, looking, sin position with my finger on the trigger. Pure alkaline and fluoride. You up. I seen a spaceship fly out the back of a truck. Diamond water I've been splashed with the fountain of youth. Had a molar fall out, I grew in a gold tooth. Bulletproof, my clan swore to surgical steel. I don't feel, I'm comfortably numb, stable to slump. Insomniac, I'm charged off the rays of the sun. You can't hug a handle, huh? This is one on one. With the strength of tension, I'ma murder you, son.
Shout out to Road Trips. Shout out to Bashi Rose, Steeza. Had a nice road trip up to Brooklyn the other day. This is I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. And on that road trip, we were going up to do a Real News Network project on a day in the life of gentrification in Brooklyn. And shout out to Dr. Ferdera Hadley for setting that up. People will remember her for her tribute, helping me with the Donnie Hathaway tribute we did on here a couple of months ago. And well, maybe even a year ago. Has it been that long already? Shout out to Greg Tate. We met up with him as well. Brilliant musician and journalist and author, and a number of other people, including we took a tour of Do the Right Thing Way, which was pretty interesting because you could actually see the Larry Bird Go Back to Boston scene playing out live right now. Literally, we were driving down the street and a white man with his dog was walking down Do the Right Thing way. Like, this is perfect. This is so funny. So, funny, sad, funny, real, whatever, all of that. So, but anyway, so, you know, but on that road trip, we were rocking a lot of that album there, Ghostface, with Bad, Bad, Not Good. The track is Sour Soul. Good to hear Ghost on some live instrumentation. And, including LZI's, Elmatic. We rocked some of that as well. We might play a little bit of that today before we get out of here. But anyway, Dr. Hate's doing, handling people's business, as is Dr. Burroughs. And in a moment, we're going to step aside and take a quick break and come back with your phone calls at 202-588-0893. If you want to get into anything with us, since we're not going to be around for community comment today. But a couple of things I just wanted to finish up with. I was talking about the George Jackson mixtape and the refusal of some folks to let us use some of these Dilla beats. And part of the email that I got from one of the holders, who I understand is a black man in London, which was, you know, a nice little added, you know, nudge here. I won't read the entire email, but basically he was saying, the one line I will read, he said, to be very honest, I had let him know we were trying to do this project. It's educational. It's not commercial. It's for, you know, to reintroduce people to George, blah, 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 blah. And I sent him a piece where we had the young man rhyming about George over a Dilla track. And his line here is, and this copyright holder says, to be very honest with you, I would not clear a Dilla track for the project, end quote. And then, I don't want to get some other folks involved in anything, so I won't read too much of the rest of the email. But his point was, just that he would not clear a track for this project. And he said, by the way, the other music that you've used, you're unlikely to get approved as well as Universal Music controls the Slum Village masters. Which is deep on a number of levels. And I've talked about this. I've written a little bit about it. And my argument fundamentally is that copyright, much like, you know, it's interesting. You heard, if you were listening to Democracy Now! This morning, you heard Ralph Nader on. And I always encourage people to check out a lecture I recorded and put up at mixwhatilike.org some years ago of his sister, Laura, talking about the rule of law and imperialism. And part of what the argument she and her colleague were making is that imperialists go and conquer land and then they create the rule of law. They create even that phrase, the rule of law, which is really just a fancy way of saying, we are going to set up an institutional legal lock on what it is we're doing, and that will prevent you from resisting what we're doing or responding in any kind of way to what we're doing, and we'll give justification to what we're doing. So I've actually argued that copyright functions in that way in terms of music. Why in the world should I have to be going to to someone else to get permission to use a Dilla beat? You know, he accuses us in the email of not having a relationship with the Yancey. He calls it the Yancey Foundation. And without getting into any detail about that, that's just patently false. In fact, the relationship is pretty strong. But the point is that Ma Dukes, the Dilla Foundation, does not control Dilla's, in this case at least, does not control Dilla's catalog. And as has been made out, the author Michelle Stevenson, some may even remember an interview we did with her some years ago on WPFW, as she has pointed out in her work, artists are often better dead. They're more valuable dead to the industry than they are alive, in part because they can't mess up the brand by acting in real life, and they can't reap the benefit financially and materially of the work that they produce. So this is certainly the case here, where we're being accused of not having a relationship with the Dilla Foundation or the family, which is not at all true. And then having to go to somebody else to get permission for a Dilla track to be played in conjunction with a George Jackson mixtape that nobody is using commercially would not hurt the commercial value of a Slum Village track. Nobody's going to hear this under and be like, I'm not going to listen to Slum Village when I was initially going to. I mean, nobody. So it's just frustrating in that sense. Although, as I pointed out already, the flip side of that is that it has encouraged a form, if I may, a form of nationalism and a return to within the community to get what we need, and it is going to come out better. So in some ways, this is, I think, a powerful lesson on that, in that front as well. And again, shout out to RBI, Red Eagle, and all the others who have kicked in. Tim Hicks, Heck Dolo has said he's going to send some stuff. Others have said they're going to send some stuff. Billy Kilson as well. So people have rallied around already. And just one day of putting out a call. And in fact, just mentioned this already, got somebody getting in touch with us who has control over copyright over some Dilla beats and wants to hear from us as well. So, I mean, we reaching out back to the families actually worked out better. But I just wanted to point that out as a sort of an example, a microcosmic example of what is going on in our society with copyright, the rule of law, imperialism, and so on and so forth, and the lack of control over our own commercial or cultural rather product or ideas. So, all right, with that said, this is I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. Another quick break, and we're going to come right back with much more, including your phone calls at 202-588-0893. Don't go anywhere. Much more coming up. Again, this is WPFW 89.3 FM.
It's Black Fist Fridays.
Hello, my name is David Levine, and I'm the 2015 WPFW Local Election Supervisor. The following are messages from candidates for the upcoming 2015 WPFW Local Station Board election. To view their full statements, visit elections.pacifica.org. Thank you.
I am Campbell C. Johnson III, a third-generation Washingtonian. I support self-determination and justice for WPFW. Previously, I served 6 years as a contributing member of the local station board and the national board. I've served as chair of various significant committees. I want your vote. I'm committed, experienced, skilled, and a team player. I'm a product of D.C.'s public schools with a Master's of Business Administration degree in finance from the University of Pennsylvania. Previously, I have served as a bank controller, executive vice president of a national development finance firm, and I founded an organization, Urban Housing Alliance, which fights displacement of low and moderate income residents.
I mix what I like.
It's about that.
Colton is cotton.
Hacking the dietary sustenance tradition versus health. Hacking the comfort compliance. Hacking to the rebellious gene. Hacking the doctrine capitalism in relation to free labor and slavery. Hacking to the history of the bank as beating the odds, the mere act of joining the winning team. Hacking the desperation and loneliness, the balance of community and the marketplace. Hacking the land rights and ownership. Hacking the business law, proprietorship. Hacking to ambition and greed. Hacking the forms of government, the history of revolution, the relation to suffering and sufferance. Hacking the faith and morality, the treatment of one faith towards another. Hacking the masculinity, femininity, sexuality, what is taught, what is felt, what is learned, what is shared. Hacking the gods, stories of creation, serpents and eggs. Hacking the nature, biodynamics, biodiversity, cycles and seasons. Hacking the time, calendars, Descartes, its relationship to doubt, its desire, the fear, the notion of control, the space-time continuum, the force of gravity, whether the opposite of gravity is freedom. Hacking the freedom, power, responsibility, justice, the Bill of Rights, hacking the coincidence, the summer of 68, the 27 Club, the number of people with Facebook profiles, people who choose to share, people who share too much, people who seem lonely, people who want to uplift, people who want to connect, people who need uplifting, hacking the self-help, self-sufficiency, and self-indulgence, hacking the crazy, hacking the lunatic, hacking the star, hacking the infamous, notorious, hacking the narcissism, the effects of poverty on the psyche, the effects of race, the effects of cruelty, the victims that survived. There is a panel marked survival. Three simple copper wires coiled around an orb, hacking the orbit, equatorial landmines, useful and precious metals, Colton as cotton, hacking the hazardous, nuclear, nuclear, cloud forming fish farm, cow farts and pitching, hacking the horse, industrial, digital, hacking the code, use your instrument as metaphor, harness your craft, hacking to the mainframe, dismantle definition, development, duty, hacking the destiny, hacking the dream, subtext and subconscious, hacking the heart, cardio, congo, blood, bitch, and oil, hacking the suffering and despair, hacking the unfair advantage of those lucky enough to be born into one family or another, into one condition or another, hacking the circumstantial evidence that proves the obvious and wakes the oblivious, hacking the birthright, bloodlines, royal and tainted, hacking the superstition, old wives' tales, the rituals of the shaman, hacking the chemistry, the pharmaceutical industry, the modern-day rape of the forest, hacking the DNA, the coiling serpents, the time it takes for modern man to determine whether ancient men were foolish or not, hacking to the database, hacking to the subconscious, the panel marks of survival, happen to celebrity, happen to the cultural development of taste, happen to violence, fear, and ignorance? How are they linked?
Get down.
He's big enough to the number one to right now.
I mix what I like.
Yeah, Coltan is Cotton. Some new Saul Williams for you. Shout out to Dr. Hate for putting us on to that. And shout out to all of you who will get in touch with the Saul Williams latest release. And then make the world a little bit better. Expand your ability to think about and consider things. And maybe even inspire some art of your own. Coltan as Cotton, which I think is brilliant. J Dilla, African Rhythms underneath us right now at WPFW 89.3 FM, imixwhatilike.org. One other thing I did want to mention to you all before we get to the calls, 202-588-0893. Of course, please let's be mindful of the time and other people's desire to engage in the discussion. If you would, as you think about your comments. One other thing though, Black Agenda Report, Bruce Dixon. In his new story, Yale's $40,000 wet kiss anoints Black Lives Matter's DeRay McKesson, their kind of quote-unquote transformational leader. I hope you all saw that. DeRay McKesson has gotten himself a $40,000 a year teaching appointment up at Yale University to talk about transformational leadership and Black Lives Matter. Man, I had a chance to talk to Tom Porter this morning on the way in here, which is even for a heathen like me, is a blessing in and of itself. And it's a shame not more of us get the chance to talk with Tom himself or with people who think that way. And it's just, I laugh sort of sadly as I think about the amount of effort that has gone in and continues to go into to denying popular access to people like Tom Porter and the ideas with which he works. And how quick and easy the state and its institutions will reward whoever they determine is their kind of transformational leader. DeRay McKesson, a lot of people follow him. He's got a big Twitter following. Got into, I think, as I mentioned on air a couple of weeks ago, an appropriate debate with Dream Hampton about what it is to be an activist. And he himself, I think, broke off from Black Lives Matter officially, though I don't understand that he was ever officially in real organization or effort with those groups, to form something else with a colleague of his, and is now going to be teaching the youth at Yale about Black Lives Matter, about transformational leadership and political struggle. So I hope that those of us who have other goals and other ideas in mind are doing what we are doing. I certainly am not, frankly, to balance this out, to build up our own leaders and movements and organizations, because this is pretty disturbing to me that someone who would be so hostile to not only Dream Hampton, but my comrade Rosa Clemente, and dismissive of the work that they have done and the ideas they represent and the movements they represent, is now going to get a reward of this magnitude when so many great people are not only not invited to places like Yale, but are actively kept out of institutions of any kind that would have them reaching, you know, greater audiences, particularly of young people. So that's pretty deep to me. I hope you all check out Black Agenda Report this week and see that story there. But anyway, as I promised, again, this is WPFW. I mix what I like. And the phones are open, 202-588-0893. We got a couple callers on the line. Caller, welcome to WPFW. You are on the air with me, and I mix what I like, and the rest of our collective audience and community. Good morning.
Good morning. M. Ma'at Hotep to you, my brother, and the PFW listening audience. I'm going to try to do this in 2 minutes or less. Are you with me?
I'm with you. I'm waiting. Yes, okay. Indeed. Sorry about that. Yes.
I'm talking to my dear beloved Black brothers and sisters. What makes us the real Indians is our blackness, not the opposite, namely because we have some lighter colored skin or straight instead of nappy hair and some so-called, quote, sacred blood of the Western Hemisphere, unquote. That's all pure nonsense. What makes us Indians is our Africanness, the first identified as such by all honest, ancient, and most modern scholars, scientists, genealogists, historians, and other researchers. These mixed blood mulattoes and whites, calling themselves the indigenous first Native American Red Indians, have hijacked that title, just as the mixed blood mulattoes and whites did in Egypt and are now doing in the so-called Middle East against the Kushite black original Palestinians, who were the first called Phoenicians. Do some real research and you'll find that red, the Latin word rojas, was used to describe mixed or white people. But the Moors, Portuguese, and Spanish used the word from the original Latin and Greek, indio, meaning blue-black, deeply melanated people, and indi, on the root of Anu or Anasazi, meaning ancient ones, first descendants of creator on the earth, the divine people from on high. Mm. True aboriginal indigenous people, America and Africa are both names of African people, man, not Romans and Greeks.
That is.
Let me finish this. I'm gonna be done in just a couple of more sentences.
We really got to keep it. We appreciate that, man. We've heard the line. We appreciate you staying firm on that line. But we got a number of other callers we want to get to, and I want to actually hear if anybody is interested in talking with anybody heard of. I'm just getting caught up to this too with the coup d'état in Burkina Faso. We don't hear a lot of African stories, not enough of them at least. Shout out to Africa Now here at WPFW, but yeah, I'm very interested if anybody is following this and want to enlighten me on that. Anyway, thank you, brother, for the update again on that history of yes sir, who's up next here at WPFW in 89.3 FM? Good morning to you.
Good morning, my brother. Good to hear your voice again. And yes, we want Dr. Porter back at the WPFW. The whole world saw what happened to the Syrian refugees at the border of Hungary, and the right wing in Hungary did what it did to those refugees, and the whole world was saddened by. Among those refugees who are not mentioned are the Ethiopian refugees, the Eritrean refugees, and West African refugees. Mainly, it's told about the Syrian. Yes, the majority of them are Syrians. And the Belgian right wing doing such a horrible thing to refugees who seek peace is unacceptable. And we, the people who care about human rights all around the world, who care about freedom, who care about justice, need to do something against the Hungarian right wing until it falls. Let's start by boycotting Hungarian wine, Hungarian products, anything that says made in Hungary. Also, let's go and have sanctions, not like the one at the Security Council that goes one big far against the other, but sanctions against anything Ethiopian. Sanctions against any product that comes from Eritrea. Political campaign against the Eritrean dictator. Political campaign against the Ethiopian dictators. And political campaigns, especially college kids, against the Hungarian embassies.
All right, man. Thank you very much again for keeping us up to date on what's going on in the world vis-a-vis the Ethiopian experience. We got the WPFW faithful on the line. Those with the WPFW number 202-588-0893 locked into at least their top two speed dial presets. And we appreciate hearing from them as often as we do. Anybody else on the line? WPFW 89.3 FM. I mix what I like.
What?
Yes. Good morning. Welcome. Welcome
Thank
to the,
you.
To the show.
This is Jan deep in the heart of Virginia.
Oh,
a heathen as yourself.
Yeah.
I think we have the only logic that's going on, you know. But anyway, I came in late, but I was listening to your talk about copyrights.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know, and I would like for some of your researchers to research and get locked into what happened when Congress actually suspended copyright laws so that Time Warner could come in and buy up wholesale predominantly black music. That happened. And so I can't tell you exactly when. It was several years ago. Not several, but maybe 20 years ago. And that's why when you get a new Corolla, you might hear Fats Domino singing in the background and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm not familiar with that specific.
Yeah, well, it happened. It happened.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying I'm not familiar with it. I have to look. Definitely want to learn more about that. It is certainly the case that, well, really, in the research that I had done, I mean, the problem began back before there even was a music industry. Started with even with the sheet music so-called industry and with the earliest blues artists. From day one, those who, I mean, it's the same old Marxist line, those who control the means of production.
Didn't have any copyrights. We sang because we sang, just like we do now.
No, exactly. That's my point, that,
right.
that the issue has been from day one a situation where, in this case, black artists sign away the rights to their music, whether it was in the sheet music industry or in the recording industry, and where intellectual property has become, of which, you know, copyright is just one subset, has become one of the biggest businesses in this country, because this country doesn't produce anything other than ownership of people's ideas and their and their cultural expression. This problem still persists. And what it does, and my argument is simply that it allows those who rule to determine not only what will be popular or how popular something will be, but it of course works in the opposite of denying people access to mainstream or popularity, and then of course allows only the same handful to reap the material benefit from it all. So the idea that I mean, I really wanted to say a lot to this guy about the Dilla situation, but the idea that he would feign some sort of concern for the holders of the copyright being properly compensated, and the artist himself and the family of the Yancey family themselves are not part of that equation is, again, sadly laughable to me. And anyway, you know, but anyway, so I just, yeah, so I appreciate that. I'm going to look up see if we can find some more about that particular moment in history. You know, by the way, that was one thing where I'm supposed to be working on this project for a year now, talking about C. Dolores Tucker. This was one thing where I differed with almost everybody in the hip hop community around C. Dolores Tucker, that when she was waging her fight in the 90s around Time Warner's control and propagation of the worst forms of hip hop, it was misconstrued, I think, as an attack on black youth and on hip hop itself, when it was really, hers was really an attack. And there are other things. I'm not saying she was a perfect woman and a saint, but her attack here, as I understand it and interpreted it then and now, was in saying, how can we allow this handful of corporate elite, white men in business suits, to determine what forms of black art will reach black youth? And that's exactly what has happened. And it's worse today than at any other point in time. One of the things that I think was sadly interesting about all of this is that we have a young man who had never, to my knowledge, was not familiar with Dilla, rhyming over a Dilla beat about George Jackson, introduced to Dilla through our work on George Jackson, which theoretically could lead to, you know, an increased renaissance of Dilla's popularity among a younger generation. And this label guy is saying no, even if we were to offer money, he wouldn't allow us to use it for this project. And which again is because it's about manipulating ideas and social behavior and the behavior of people in relationship to those ideas, and not so much about making money, as is often the claim. But anyway, WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Jared Ball here. I mix what I like. imixwhatilike.org for more on the show and more at I mix what I like for all of your relevant social media. Got a couple people on the line. Good morning and welcome to our I mix what I like edition of Community Comment. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Is it me?
Yeah. This is you. That's you.
Okay. First of all, let's talk about, I have 2 points. When Charlie Parker recorded Back Home in Indiana, he recorded that and he started it on his improvised solo. And the man asked him, could he remember the beginning of his improvised solo? And he said, sure. He said, why? He said, said, pick a name. And he called, he said, Donnelly. He said, that's what it's going to be called. So he didn't have to pay Charlie Parker the royalties for the song. I mean, that's just one example. And the example of keeping music out of, keeping what they don't want you to hear. I did a survey, once and of 100 random people and zero knew who zero African Americans that I ran into on the street knew who Albert Eiler was, as opposed to, maybe 10% of Caucasians and Mexicans knew. And Albert Eiler was a profoundly amazing African American composer and improviser. So I agree with you that, but I'd also like to speak to what Tahuti said and, in two words. So what? I mean, why does he continually say the same thing over and over again of which human beings are the original ones? And I also question the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan about the phrase synagogue of Satan. What's with that? Why are they
bringing up old stuff? That's so old. That's like Jesse's Hymietown statement. That's old.
It ain't old.
My God. You know why Farrakhan says that? You know why Farrakhan says that? This is why I think Farrakhan says that. Because so that Abraham Foxman can have a job. I think Farrakhan is doing Abraham Foxman and the ADL a service. He's hooking them up to keep them relevant so they can go and fundraise.
Well, they're not relevant. They're like
that's my point. That's my point. And everybody keeps bringing up this old stuff. What about the current relationships? I think that would be much more important for everybody to focus on.
On the back of his latest issue of The Final Call, he's got a book two of Synagogue of Satan. You know, I mean, that was just recently, like 2 weeks ago when I saw that. I mean, what's with that? And basically,
you call Farrakhan's PR service and ask,
did,
you know,
I
what,
did
what's
I
that?
Ask him but basically, I really am confused about why my brother Tahuti continues to harp on who the original human
when Tahuti
being.
Calls in either later today or tomorrow, I'm sure he can answer that. My response, I'm not speaking for him at all. My response, why I think it's important, is because I think that there is a relationship between what people think of other people and of themselves and how they're treated materially. So I don't discount the value in that kind of recognizing that history or investigating the origins, of the current classifications we're all forced under, and their purpose. I think there's value in that. I think there's a way of that we could talk about it without being, you know, without creating new enemies, but I think it's important that we do know that history to the extent that it's reminding people of the appropriate place African people have had and continue to have in world history. Caller, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM, and I Mix What I Like. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Something I don't understand is a little bit. Is Black Martha is included the whole Africa or only African-American here only?
And I'm sorry, what was that you were saying? What was that? I'm sorry, I didn't...
Black matter, is this for the whole nation of black people or only for African-Americans?
Black Lives Matter is specifically addressing the conditions of black people anywhere in the world. That point has been made. They have made that point repeatedly, yes.
Number two, okay, my brother. And number two, you know, in Washington, D.C., after... we sweeped the business and we cleared the business about the taxi cab. And this corporation, they came and they snatched it from us, okay? It's the same thing. The artists who African-American people, they are the most significant, brilliant artists they have. Why not we organize it and boycott? Let them come and buy and let them come. Because these people only, they snatch your mind, they snatch your work, they snatch your money, they put their hand in their pocket. Even me, I am immigrant, I'm very well understanding about this because of the weakness of the black people. You give away your knowledge, you give away your work, you give away everything. Even in Washington, D.C., look at it, the District of Columbia, they used to have responsibility for us in order of to keep this business for black people. But No more. No more. These yucky people, they come in, they snatch from our hands.
I appreciate the call. I'm sorry to rush you off, but we got to make way for the LSB show coming up here at WPFW. But I do identify with giving away my black skill and talent for free. This is WPFW 89.3 FM. I mix what I like. Thanks to Red Eagle. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Stanley Nelson. Thanks to all the gods and the earths. All that good stuff. We'll catch you in the world when everybody. Peace if you're willing to fight for it. And as you are about to hear from Elzai, the world is yours, everybody. Go ahead and get it. Peace if you're willing to fight for it.
You want to get it? Black Fist Fridays.
I'm
what
I like.
You know what I'm saying? Get yours because it's yours. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, I'm going Rambo or fam, though it's moving pretty damn slow. The blam blam, turn a Trans Am into a Lambo. Scram, yo, my soul caliber is like Namco. I dance on track, but these is a Sambo. Get your split, you nitwit, you is a slick. When labels you, they make fit. Command is skill invincible, like the Man of Steel. My killers got your gorilla slipping on banana pills. I'm extraordinary, I know you're ex-shorty, extra with that. But a sex ordinary, check the technician, neck glisten, I'm on the catch wreck mission. The rock you shot like an electrician without correct vision. You can't see me, I'll cock the Glock and shoot it through your TV like it's easy as if I seen you make a sudden move like a Ouija board. I can't record making cheese looking cheesy.
Fuck that. It's yours, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours, it's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
Yo, to my man Jay Dilla, God bless your life. To my Big Proof, God bless your life. Yeah, I'm the champion, signing both breasts on the trampy blind. Eating shrimp scampi, I done left your whole camp behind. Cause in the grand scheme, I see a plan scheme. Off-brand team, full of minus the hand cream. That's why I struck while the iron ran steam. With a maneuver smoother than the Iron Man's theme song. We battled, you won, but you just wasn't in your dream long. I gleam strong like I'm using my high beams wrong. Rotting in the Rover, spit the poison that's hotting in the Cobra. Take your spot and slide it over. A murder is observed, that's word. Heard I was a herb, then you got your facts blurred. It's the ruler who sparkles like a jeweler holding moolah. I know I seem cooler, but I'm cold blooded. Didn't mean to fool you.
Whose world is this?
It's yours, it's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's mine,
it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose
check
world
it, I'm past nice. Floss jewels, flash ice. Hit the grass twice and get higher than the gas price. Life. Block ducker, money in the sock tucker. You watch the block, I watch the stocks. Major difference, been deranged since the age of infant. Some danger, hit you from long range of distance. It's stranger than fiction, with my affliction pierce through your thick skin. I'm spitting illa rhymes, rough as gorilla palms. You soft as chinchillas, your album's got a bunch of fillers. My mind's monumental, my pen is penetration that produce words to bleed on the pad like menstruation. Yeah, my name holds weight, tipping scales. These clipping shells make dudes strip like Chippendales. Y'all all whack, should fall back like you slipping fail. L's ripping well, deliveries like shipping mail.
Whose world is this?
It's yours, it's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.